Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Poem Peeps. This is Luke Hedrick. I'm one of the associate editors. I'm excited to be here today, one of the first episodes I'm hosting without Dave and Monty. And today we're excited to bring you another in our episodes of these rapid-fire journal clubs. I'm also excited because today we're being joined by Robert Wharton. He's a new guest on the show. Robert's a third-year internal medicine resident at the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York, and he's an incoming pulmonary and critical care fellow at the Johns Hopkins Hospital. Robert, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Really excited to be here. I'm a longtime fan of the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out. So Robert has a great paper for us today that's a little bit different from some of the other trials we've been looking at in that it's a systematic review and meta-analysis. And in particular, it's looking at a number of different inhaler papers around this idea of smart therapy for asthma. So Robert, before we dig into the details, why don't you tell us a little bit about what was the context that this meta-analysis was published in? What was the kind of the background information we need to know?
Sure. So the problem that had been identified when people started doing these trials in the early 2000s was that patients on controller therapy were still having lots of exacerbations and lots of SABA use. And this was thought to be driven by how much asthma can fluctuate as patients experience changing exposures. So investigators in several different groups were interested in using inhaled corticosteroid plus LABA as needed on top of controller maintenance therapy. And there's a few reasons this might work. First is the idea that early anti-inflammatory effect of ICS could prevent clinical deterioration as a steroid has a little bit more time to work and accumulate with repeated doses. Second is the idea that formoterol specifically is fast onset and could theoretically be used for symptom relief. It's important to note that formoterol is the only LABA that has this property, and there are currently only two combination inhalers with formoterol on the market in the U.S. One of them is budesonide formoterol or Symbicort, and the other one is mometasone formoterol or Dulera. And then finally, there's just the added convenience of having one inhaler do both jobs, and thus the name single maintenance and reliever therapy or SMART. You all talked in the inhalers episode about how hard it can be to achieve good inhaler technique. This can be even worse if you have to manage two kinds of inhalers at once. So this is the zeitgeist going into the several trials that were published in the same space.
Yeah, and I love that you brought a meta-analysis for us to go over today because there were so many papers in this space all around the same time with similar patient populations and slight differences. And so I think when there's such a body of evidence, it can be helpful to try to take a step back and look at the totality of it, which is what we're doing here. And so specifically, the paper we're looking at is a systematic review and meta-analysis by Sobiraj and their co-authors. It was published in JAMA in 2018, and it looked at smart therapy versus a daily controller with an ICS plus or minus a LABA, and then as needed, short-acting beta agonist. And so really was comparing the reliever strategy. Robert, did I describe that correctly?
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
All right. So Robert, why don't you tell us a little bit about the methods and what they did a little bit, since this is our first meta-analysis on the journal club?
Yeah. So getting into their methodology a little bit, the first thing they say is that their protocol was developed a priori, which is really important for meta-analysis. You can imagine that it could be easy for authors to look for a positive effect or confirm their bias by cherry picking the way they do their analysis. So it's good to develop a protocol upfront and publish it ahead of time. They looked through a number of databases, including Medline, Ovid, Cochrane, and Embase, and also did backward citation searching to find papers that were cited by relevant papers to make sure they didn't miss anything. And they also looked through an international clinical trials registry platform, clinicaltrials.gov, to have a complete set of trials that met their inclusion criteria. And what studies were they looking for? Specifically, it was anything that compared single maintenance and reliever therapy versus either ICS alone controller or ICS plus LABA controller with a SABA reliever. And all the studies that were included had to have some relevant outcome measure. So that could be asthma exacerbations, including ED visits, systemic corticosteroids or hospitalization, all-cause or asthma-specific mortality, asthma-related quality of life, lung function parameters, or healthcare use. broad outcome criteria. Importantly, they defined a minimum clinically important difference ahead of time for the asthma control questionnaire 5, ACQ-5, and FEV1, which makes their interpretation of the results more transparent. Another note from the methods is that missing data can be a threat to the internal validity of a meta-analysis, but it looks like they did their due diligence to get all the data they could by scouring those databases and additionally contacted authors for additional necessary data, like the outcomes from the first half of a crossover trial. And then finally, in a meta-analysis, it's important to evaluate not just the pooled effect of the included trials, but also the individual risks of bias in the included trials. And they used a common tool for this, which is the Cochrane risk of, tool to inform how confident they can be in their conclusions. There were a few studies in the study population that were not blinded, which could represent a source of bias in favor of SMART for the subjective outcomes. But overall, the included studies were well conducted with a low risk of attrition bias.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for walking us through some of the nuts and bolts of how a meta-analysis or systematic review gets put together like that. And just to make sure I'm following the plot here, essentially what they're doing is they're looking for a bunch of different papers that are in these various databases that are looking at a similar intervention and are reporting on similar outcomes so that they can try to pool those together and get us a more specific estimate of what their actual meaningful outcome is. And then I love the points you made too about how publishing their methods ahead of time and then looking at the quality of those included studies and the risk of bias really explicitly before conducting the rest of their analyses, just as a way to try to keep things transparent and help make us more confident in their conclusions. All right. So we usually like to talk about the trial population. I think with a meta-analysis, I think it's helpful both to think of the patients that are included, but also the type of papers that are included. And so, Robert, maybe you can help us think through who was actually involved in this meta-analysis.
Sure. So the stated inclusion criteria were that everyone had to be on an inhaled corticosteroid at study entry. Most of the trials had more than half of the participants on a LABA as well. The trials differed subtly based on the asthma definition and whether they needed to be on the LABA to be in it and how much ICS they needed to be getting and whether symptoms were necessary or asthma exacerbations in the past year were necessary to be included. For instance, the trial by Klaus Rabe and his colleagues in 2006 included patients ages 12 to 80 years on inhaled corticosteroid 200 to 500 micrograms per day, FEV1 60 to 100% predicted, who were symptomatic with more than 7 SABA inhalations during the last 10 run-in days. In total, there were 16 trials. A quarter of them looked at SMART versus ICS plus SABA. The rest were SMART versus ICS LABA plus SABA. There are 22,000 patients total across all these 16 studies. Most of them were female, 2/3, with a mean age of the adults of 42 years. FEV1% predicted ranged from the low 70s to low 80s, and most of the patients were on low to moderate ICS. So in summary, this is a group in young to middle adulthood who are on controller therapy, which is in contrast to our previous episode on novel START, which looked at ICS-LABA as a reliever in patients with mild symptomatic asthma who are not already on maintenance inhaled corticosteroids.
So I love that last point there. I'm thinking of how this kind of fits into that spectrum of asthma care with novel START on one end, with patients who are, you know, just using as needed inhalers, and here people who are on maintenance. And so looking specifically at adjusting that maintenance or reliever strategy, excuse me. All right. And so, Robert, we've talked a little bit about how they did this. Maybe it's time now to talk about what they found.
Yeah, the headline result is that SMART was associated with a lower risk of asthma exacerbations compared to the same dose of inhaled corticosteroids and LABA controller therapy. The relative risk was 0.68 with a 95% confidence interval spanning from 0.58 to 0.80 and an absolute risk difference of 6.4% for a number needed to treat of 16. They did a separate analysis comparing SMART to a higher dose of inhaled corticosteroids and LABA controller therapy. And for this comparison, the relative risk was 0.77 for an absolute risk difference of minus 2.7%. So not quite as strong of an effect. And I think this just highlights one advantage of meta-analysis as a methodology here, is that you can have a more precise estimate of effect size when you're able to pool several studies that are similar in this way.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like there's one of the benefits of being able to look at 22,000 patients in total is that we can be more precise and a little bit more confident in some of the specific numbers we're finding. And that number needed to treat of 16 is pretty remarkable. If you think about just your average panel size in your clinic, the number of people you're going to see a day in clinic, and how common asthma is, it seems like this is a pretty significant intervention and finding here, and something that could have real meaningful effect for people.
Yeah, I've personally seen that prescribing SMART in the primary care clinic. To be fair, looking at some of the secondary endpoints in the study, they found no clear signal for improvement in asthma symptoms, mild exacerbations or lung function, or rescue medication use. But that may be an issue with power.
Yeah, and thanks for bringing that up. I think, you know, we've sung the praises of all the benefits of these systematic reviews and meta-analyses, but like everything, there's no free lunch. And so I'm sure there's some limitations to keep in mind here for this paper.
Yeah, I think there are a couple interesting issues with external validity. One is that the trials included were all fairly short. The longest was about a year. And so whether they can evaluate the long-term safety and efficacy is technically an open question. It's hard to evaluate asthma-related mortality in this population because the overall mortality is very low and the period of follow-up time is short. Most of the trials in the study used a dry powder inhaler, but the metered dose inhaler is actually the only formulation of budesonide formoterol available in the United States, which is a caveat. I will say in this population with moderate asthma, the two are probably equivalent. I don't think there's an a priori reason one would outperform the other. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's always important to mention that what we're able to do practically is slightly different than what they were doing in these trials, but I'm not aware of any particular reason to think that the dry powder inhaler would be superior compared to the types of devices that we have available in the US.
Another point I'll bring up here, and this is not a limitation per se, just one potential missed opportunity with this meta-analysis is that they didn't look at adverse effects. In general, meta-analysis is a very good tool for looking at adverse effects because the signal in individual trials for harm may not be statistically significant, but then you pool them together and you can find what the actual risk is. They didn't look at adverse events in this meta-analysis, but from what we know from the individual trials, these therapies are generally safe and well-tolerated. And then finally, some of the secondary endpoints became statistically but not clinically significant in a sensitivity analysis using a different kind of model. Sensitivity analyses are sometimes performed to provide reassurance that the choice of statistical model is appropriate. And when sensitivity analyses disagree with the main analysis, the results are sensitive to the choice of model, which decreases the confidence in the results. So overall, I think that some of their secondary outcomes were sensitive to the choice of model. We can't say with confidence that SMART has a meaningful effect on either lung function or mild exacerbations, and we'll need to wait for more data before we can draw firm conclusions.
Yeah, and just to thank you for bringing that up. I think too, just to spare our listeners some math on their morning commute, I think one way to say this is just that they ran the data kind of two slightly different ways, and there were a couple secondary outcomes that were statistically significant one way, but not the other. But none of the changes in the effect size were clinically meaningful and would not change the kind of overall conclusion here that the meta-analysis was suggesting. And Robert, I love that point you made about adverse events and a bit of a potential missed opportunity. It's one of the things we always talk about when we're talking about other papers is that adverse events from our interventions are thankfully often relatively uncommon. And so sometimes you worry about a trial being, you know, underpowered to really assess those. And so that is one of the real strengths of meta-analyses. I'm greedy and I wanted an N of 22,000. I wanted them to report on as much as possible. But this is already a really great paper. So thank you for bringing it to us. Okay, and so we've talked a fair amount about the paper. What is your headline takeaway here?
What I'll get away from this paper is that SMART reduces asthma exacerbations compared to SABA inhaler plus controller with a quite robust effect size with a number needed to treat of 16, but wasn't definitively shown to have effects on asthma-related quality of life or spirometry. I also have a takeaway about the study design, which is that when a sensitivity analysis disagrees with the main analysis, it can decrease our confidence in the results. And I like this trial because I think we've seen, and I like this study because I think we've seen in other contexts how important adherence can be to real-world efficacy. So for instance, there was a study out of Mount Sinai a couple of years ago where they looked at giving someone their same blood pressure meds, either all in one pill and, or split across separate pills. And they had a fairly significant reduction in major adverse cardiac events just compared to giving them separately. So I think analogous to that, the simplicity of a single inhaler is a big win for patients.
Yeah, and selfishly, a big win for pulmonary fellows and people prescribing these inhalers too. It's a lot easier to manage and teach a single inhaler and inhaler technique than try to manage a couple that are changing constantly at the whims of an insurance company. Yes, I'm a big fan of smart therapy. And thank you so much, Robert, for bringing this to us. I think this fits nicely into that kind of spectrum of asthma care.
Thanks again for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. That's a wrap for today's episode. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Make sure to give us a like and a follow on social media, wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help people find the show. And we'll see you again soon with another episode.